This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
And off we go into hour number three of the whatever today is, Tuesday edition of the I'll Get My Life Together at some point. Today's not that day, but at some point, I believe I may figure out how to be a functioning adult. We'll find out. But as long as I get to keep showing up to work, in joggers and t-shirts and backward hats and talk about football and trick people into giving me money for it, why? Why would I ever do such a thing, all right? Now, to someone who is responsible, to someone who is good at her job, who is a functioning adult, and yet also has tricked people into giving us money to talk about football, the lovely Lulu Kesson covers the South Carolina Gamecocks for the Greenville News over in Columbia, South Carolina, ordinarily joins us on Thursday mornings at 8 o'clock to talk Gamecock football, basketball, baseball, whatever we're going to get into. But Lulu has been kind enough, as this Thursday is Thanksgiving, to shift over and talk a little Tuesday football with us. She is on the phone here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Good morning, young lady. How do you do?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Because Lulu, I got to work one more day this week, and then I'm off for 4 days. Like, how could I not be great?
I mean, it's a holiday week. There's not a lot to complain about.
There's nothing to complain about. Lulu, I have, you got to do, you know, every show in America is going to do the Thanksgiving Day, you know, what's your favorite side? And that's fine. That's a fine question. It's a good one to talk about. That's not the question I want to ask you, Lulu Kesson. The question I have for you is, what's the best Thanksgiving dessert? Everybody talks about the, you know, the collard greens or their grandma's casserole or whatever. That's all well and good, but we all look forward. Life is better when you eat the dessert first. What's the go-to Thanksgiving dessert?
I'm a really big, like, maple person. So last year I made a maple cream pie. That was really good. So any, like, maple-flavored dessert I tend to go towards. I like an apple pie. Obviously has to have vanilla ice cream with it. But I'm not too picky in terms of anything maple-related I'll likely eat.
Lulu Kesson, pardon me. Did you just say maple cream pie?
I did.
I've never heard those words together in that order. And my only question is, where, like, what's your Venmo address to get you to send me one of those? Because good God, that sounds delightful.
It is. I'll just drop one. I'll toss one at your door on my way up to Clemson on Saturday morning.
Bet. I will meet you on the side of I-85 for the handoff, okay? That sounds
perfect.
Incredible. Lulu Kesson joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. All right, homie, let's get into that discussion a little bit. And in order to set that up, I think we need to spend just a brief minute or two with last week's game. A win over Wofford took maybe a little bit later into the game to really get going than Shane Beamer would have liked. I also know, without having gotten all the way through his post-game presser, I can't imagine that the penalty yardage wasn't driving him absolutely bananas in that game. What were the takeaways from Shane from this contest, a tune-up match for Clemson?
Yeah, he said the first half was awful. He was like, there's no other really way to say it. I understand his frustration. I mean, it sort of felt like the team had a little bit of their old self sprinkled in, especially with their penalties. So I think that overall, my voice is losing itself. I think that Shane liked the way they pulled themselves together, but I think overall, like, their first half was just a little too awful to completely move on from. But he did give credit to the way that they were able to kind of like revamp, regroup, which does say something, but obviously he knows against a team of equal caliber, it's not going to be able to be the case. If you come out flat in the first half and draw five penalties for like 60 yards, you can't always win by 40. Depending on who you're playing.
Lulu Kesson talking football with us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Usually, the common thought, Lulu Kesson, is a game like that against Wofford, it's a tune-up game. It's an opportunity for you to go out there to test out some of the stuff you might want to break into the playbook the next week for a huge contest like South Carolina's is against Clemson. Did you get the vibe that this was outside of the norm, or was this kind of attacked like any other week? Do you think that maybe there was a little bit of the boys looking ahead a week, and that's why Wofford was able to kind of make it interesting early?
I think the attack in practice this week, this past week was the same. I didn't sense any difference in the way that, you know, any coaches, well, I guess the coaches wouldn't really, but especially the players did not necessarily give any indication that they're taking this game any other way than they would an SEC game. I'm potentially, you know, maybe the senior night stuff kind of trickled in. Obviously, Shane talked about how it's really hard to be super emotional, and, you know, so much of South Carolina football at home games is the pregame routines. There's a lot that happens right before kickoff, and so I would be more confident saying that maybe some of those kind of joyful traditions, emotional feelings about it being the last, that those might have trickled in a little bit more to the first half, whereas Wofford, who it was their last game of the season, was like, okay, we don't care about any of this, we just want to play. So, I mean, maybe I'm giving them too much credit and not acknowledging that they kind of, at the beginning, took Wofford a little bit lightly, but at the same time, I got more of the vibe that it was just, a hard transition from the senior night celebrations, and that's maybe the cause for a little bit of a slow start.
All right, let's turn our attention towards what might be, nope, scratch that, what definitely is the most important game of Shane Beamer's tenure in Columbia, South Carolina. It is the most important this rivalry has felt, at least in as long as I can remember it, Lulu Kesson. I've already said, I think this is a playoff eliminator for Clemson. And while I do not think that there is room for a 3-win team in the playoffs, and if it is, there's two teams out there in Mississippi and Alabama that have heads-up wins over South Carolina, which will make it a long shot that they fight their way in. But there's a lot of people that believe this might be a playoff eliminator for South Carolina as well. What's the attitude around the team right now? I hate to ask this question because it's asking to quantify something that might be difficult to put a finger on, but what are the vibes, dude?
Vibes is my favorite word in the world. So
I'm
no
a
worries.
Big vibes guy, Lulu Kesson.
It's like my filler word. But it's also just my go-to. I will say, obviously, I haven't, I talked to players around noon today, so I haven't got the chance to really ask them Clemson-specific questions, because basically anytime you ask a player about something other than the game ahead, they just say, oh, I'm just focusing on the game. So it's been a little tricky there until now. However, I think that overall, South Carolina players and especially the coaches staff, like I very rarely heard the word playoff at all mentioned, whether that is the opportunity to keep Clemson out of the playoffs, whether that is the very slim chance they South Carolina makes the playoffs. So I think South Carolina, I think they understand that at least on their end, nothing is possible if they don't beat Clemson. And I don't think in their eyes, it's a priority to win this game to knock Clemson out of the playoffs. I think it's a priority to win this game, period. Not in any way of doing what Shane Beamer did in 2022, which was keep Tennessee and Clemson out of the playoffs this year. I don't think anyone's thinking about that. I think right now South Carolina is truly just feeling the weight of how big this win is on their end.
Lulu Kesson joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. One more abstract question, Lulu Kesson, and then we'll dive into the X's and O's. I have said that there is more on the line for both Clemson and South Carolina than just the score, than even a playoff berth, though that is obviously the primary objective of every team entering the season. What I think is on the line here is really, going back to the word vibes around the state, the national discussion right now is that perhaps Clemson's star is fading, that perhaps they are falling out of relevance in terms of the national scale. On the flip side, I heard Pat McAfee talking about South Carolina yesterday. I heard Danny Cannell talking about them in a positive light, which is like incredibly rare. I have heard every show doing a college football segment talking about South Carolina the last couple of weeks. To me, this is an opportunity for South Carolina to go out there and solidify the message that they are taking over as the premier football program in this state. On the flip side, there's nothing more dangerous than a wounded and cornered animal. Clemson knows this. They understand that if they drop this game, especially while Carolina's getting all this love from around the rest of the country, then that narrative is solidified on their end as well. This, to me, feels like they are playing for more than just a win on a rivalry Saturday, Lulu Kesson. It kind of feels like they are playing for the narrative of who's in control of the Palmetto State right now. Am I being dramatic?
No, I don't think you're being dramatic. And I honestly think that just the state of college football as a whole plays a huge part. And not to get too much into the bigger picture here, but like, obviously, you know, I'm not saying Clemson's leaving the ACC, but in general, with all the college, with all the sports conference realignments, like, you hear jokes in press rooms like, oh, when Clemson joins the SEC. There's things like that. You hear, obviously, a huge thing South Carolina fans constantly point out is Clemson's strength of schedule compared to an SEC schedule. There's a lot of factors that are very relevant right now, especially. And I think because South Carolina is arguably has the more talented roster for the first time, at least in the last 4 years, I would say confidently, that's all just kind of heightened. So I don't think you're being dramatic. I do think that this is a statement game for South Carolina. I think that there's a lot on the line for Clemson. And I think that because this rivalry, which spans obviously forever and across the state, but across many sports, like it obviously, it comes to its highest point in whatever stadium is playing the football game. It's ultimately all about football. So I'm very much looking at it in the sense of both teams have a lot to prove, but they have a lot to prove in different ways, which is what kind of makes this game so great.
Lulu Kesson from the Greenville News covers the Gamecock Athletic Department. Kind enough to join us here on a Tuesday morning since we'll be off Thursday for Thanksgiving. All right, X's and O's. Your thoughts on the actual game itself here, Lulu Kesson. I have an offensive belief, which is if I'm coordinating, if I am orchestrating an offense, there are two things I try to do. The first thing is play my strengths to their weaknesses. And the second thing is I want to get the ball where we got more dudes than they got dudes on any given snap of the football. Well, Clemson last week ran the ball a lot, like a lot. They had 10 different guys touch the ball, almost felt like it was an audition. And a lot of those runs, if not most of those runs, were gut runs, were A-B gap runs, off center, off guard. to me, it kind of feels like Clemson's going to do whatever they can do to remove a pair of very good defensive ends from the equation for South Carolina, which puts the pressure on the interior defensive line, it puts the pressure on the linebackers, and it puts the pressure on the defensive backs to maintain coverage maybe a little bit longer than they've been used to the past couple of weeks. Defensively, what do you see the challenge being for the South Carolina Gamecocks this weekend?
Well, one aspect I think that kind of matters is Clemson's injuries. I know they have at least two starting O-lines that are like day-to-day right now. And the two games, not counting last week, where their opponent wasn't necessarily as equal as Pitt and Virginia Tech, like Clemson's QB was sacked 9 times. You know, getting sacked was never really an issue for him in the beginning of the season. And then obviously just that stat alone shows how important the O-line, those starting two O-line players are. So I think if South Carolina, doesn't or sees that those two players are out, that might be a potential pocket that they can, or no pun intended, but an area of the game that they can kind of exploit, especially with Kyle Kennard and Dylan Stewart. However, they're not going to scheme for players, two players being injured. They're going to scheme in general. So to actually answer your question, I think that on defense, similar to Missouri, where Shane said, I can't sit there and say the wide receivers are going to have zero catches. It's about tackling after the catch. The same kind of goes with the run game. I think South Carolina's, especially Debo and Demetrius Knight, missed tackles have kind of been a consistent issue. I talked about it last week. So I think defensively, you know, Clemson's going to be efficient. There's no denying that. They've been efficient on offense all year. So on defense, South Carolina really needs to make sure that, okay, they make a catch, tackle them, and especially not allow, because I'm pretty sure they have just one main running back who has like 1,000 rushing yards and then the next person has like 200. Like, it's clearly kind of one main guy running the ball, and that obviously opens up their offense a lot. And but at the same time, they're a team that can also throw the ball. So whatever they try to do, they're going to do it efficiently. So I think South Carolina just needs to be efficient after the catch, regardless of where that is on the field, because that's been their biggest issue as of late.
On the flip side of the football, we have obviously seen the growth and development of Lenora Sellers, of Rocket Sanders. The two of them have become a pretty impressive dynamic. And the more that the two of them have kind of found their stride, you have started to see the rise of some of the exterior wide receivers becoming more and more prevalent and prominent in South Carolina's offense. Is there anything that you've seen that you think South Carolina matches up well or can create some advantages against a Clemson defense that has given up spots in some points and maybe forced Clemson's offense to have to play from behind and get away from the run game a little bit?
Yeah, well, I think that South Carolina, you know, it's tricky. South Carolina similarly kind of has one main running back. However, behind Rocket, it's Lenoris. I think South Carolina just probably has a little bit more versatility in terms of what their quarterback can do. And so I would say that my impression in talking to a fellow, my coworker who covers Clemson, like, I would say Clemson's run defense is kind of their weak point right now. So, I mean, it's kind of cheesy and simple, but like Rocket has to have a big game on offense, I think, to put up some points, because Clemson's defense is, I just think, a lot better in the passing game. I mean, they've given up some big plays here and there, but more consistently, it seems like the run defense is where they have the most trouble. And also they love to create turnovers. They have like 13 interceptions, 7 fumble recoveries. So Lenoris has to be incredibly intelligent with the ball and very protective of it, because with an offense like Clemson has, you give them one turnover and they can change the entire state of the game. And it's, you know, he's kind of fallen into old habits with 2 interceptions the last 2 games. Missouri obviously was a much different game than Wofford, but it's not going to be like Wofford where you throw an interception and then you get to hold them to a field goal. So Lenore in general has to be smart with the football, but I also think that Rocket has to step up and have a good game, because that will take advantage of an opportunity that South Carolina maybe has the edge, is that they have a little bit better of a run defense than Clemson will have.
That is going to be interesting, because obviously the conversation has been about Stewart and Kennard. It's been about the guys on the outside, but I genuinely think on both sides of the football, Lulu Kesson, Clemson and South Carolina, I think the linebackers and interior defensive linemen are where this game gets won and lost. I think this game is going to be won and lost between the guards. It's going to be the A gaps and maybe the B gaps for Phil Maffa on one side, for Rocket Sanders on the other. And honestly, I think this game gets won and lost by the offensive lines on both sides, the defensive lines on both sides.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting too, because South Carolina's offensive line, you know, has improved so greatly, knock on wood for them, in the last few games or so. So it's that's even more of a kind of a statement point to what we were talking about before, the mental side of it. It's like, okay, it's coming down to this. Every statement, every good game that you've had, every point you're improving in, it kind of doesn't matter anymore unless you continue that same positive play on Saturday.
Ken Lulu Kesson, one or two more, and then we will let you get back to your real job, because I know it's going to be a busy week for you, even with Thanksgiving coming up. Can South Carolina make their way in the playoffs? What's your opinion on this? Because I've said a couple of times, I don't know if there is room for a three-loss team. And if there is, there's two of them ahead of South Carolina. You would likely need Ole Miss to lose again. You would likely need Alabama to lose again. Neither one of those teams are going to the SEC title game, meaning all of it is pinned on Mississippi State and Auburn, a pair of double-digit underdogs to get the job done. But none of it matters if South Carolina can't knock off Clemson. So, is there a possibility, Lulu Kesson, that when we speak next week, we are saying we'll find out what the committee has to say? Or do you think that South Carolina fans should be just dialed in on winning an important rivalry game?
I think South Carolina fans should just be dialed in. I'm not going to ever tell a fan how to feel, but I do think that South Carolina fans need to kind of just appreciate the greatness they're seeing regardless of the college football playoffs. I fully understand that you always want to go to the next level. You want to extend your season even further, the furthest, make the playoffs, whatever. But South Carolina, if they win on Saturday, they're going to be the eighth team in program history to win 9 or more games. That's not a lot in program history of every team, of every coach. So South Carolina fans can, and with a bowl game, they can potentially finish with 10 wins. So I think there's a lot to be appreciated right now, and not to say that they're going to, you know, be worse next year, but this is the last year and potentially last two games with just staples of the South Carolina team. Like, appreciate it, you know, like think about the current and think about the present, but I'm not going to be the person that says, no, they have no chance of making the playoffs. But like you said, like Alabama beat South Carolina, Ole Miss beat South Carolina, all three of them got three losses. Like, I think the path is incredibly slim, but I'll never say never.
Lulu Kesson covers the South Carolina Gamecock Athletic Department for the Greenville News. Ordinarily joins us on Thursdays at 8 o'clock, but as I will be very asleep and preparing myself mentally for a Thanksgiving Day meal at that point, she was kind enough to join us today to talk Gamecock football as they get set for the Clemson Tigers this weekend. Lulu, number one, thank you. Number two, if you make an extra maple cream pie, yes, I will take one. Thank you very much.
Of course. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for having me on early. I appreciate it. And you gave my parents who are watching from South Carolina or listening for the first time something to wake up for on a Tuesday. So I appreciate it.
First off, Mr. and Mrs. Lulu Kesson's parents, your daughter's fantastic. Second off, I'm sorry. You can go back to bed now.
Perfect. You nailed that one.
You are the best. Thank you, Lulu. We appreciate it. You're awesome.
Of course. Happy Thanksgiving.
You
have a great rest of your week.
As well. Lulu Kesson for the Greenville News joins us again on Thursdays at 8, but kind enough to come in a little bit early to talk football with us today. Let's take a break. We come back. We'll react to some of what Lulu had to say. 840, Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast going to join us here on the radio broadcast to talk a little Carolina Panther football to end the hour. And then we'll have just 1 hour left to go on Wednesday. Nope, it's Tuesday. Oh, I thought it was Wednesday. I got really excited. I'm like, oh, I'm going home. Nope, not yet. Not yet. Not yet. One more hour, one more day. The Rob Brown Show, the Fan Upstate.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Is the Fan Upstate coming up in just a few brief moments from now? The great Rashad Beard will join us here on the radio program to talk Carolina Panther football because, y'all, there have been some people saying some very nice things about the Carolina Panthers, saying some very nice things about Bryce Young. Yesterday, we played you clips from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, a couple of dudes that no ball. They no ball. And see, I've been saying these things about Bryce Young for a minute. You give him time, you give him a line, you give him some wide receivers, and the man can cook. And what did I hear back from Lonzo and some of you guys out there in the Armada? What did I hear from some of y'all out there?
Let me tell you, you don't know ball.
What an idiot. I mean, just stupid.
Turns out, Robbie B might have been on to a little something-something when it comes to his thoughts on Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers. Robbie B might just know what he's talking about. Because I said, yo, hold up. And that same guy...
Let me tell you, you don't know ball.
Pat McAfee, yesterday on his show, him and the boys had some nice things to say about the Panthers.
Carolina Panthers, hey.
That was a battle.
Wow. What a show.
Okay. Bryce Young gets pulled from the lineup. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're going to be benched for a little bit. Then you're going to go back in there, and then you guys are going to look completely differently. I think that was a nice sense of relief for Bryce Young. Getting a chance to watch a little bit, learn a little bit, see what the offense is supposed to be, because this is his first year in Canales' offense as well. So the way they've played, Carolina Panthers. You know, and we were obviously one of the main ones to dump on them.
Sure, of course.
We like to talk about every team
rightfully
in the
so.
NFL. Yeah, whenever there's 20 people at the games and everything that's happening is happening, it's hard not to make fun of. But now that the Carolina Panthers a lot of hope going into this offseason.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
A lot of, and now, granted, we still got 6 weeks left of the season and everything like that. But there is a lot of hope for the future, I think, down there, when in the past there wasn't.
Your boy tried to tell you the issues in Charlotte were not on Bryce Young. They weren't on Dave Canales. They were on the abysmal decision-making of Scott Fitterer and David Tepper. Well, Fitzy is gone. Tep has stepped back. They got out of the way. They're letting football guys make football decisions, and all of a sudden, the football team is playing better football. They won two in a row, and they were one good defensive stand with a banged-up defense away from knocking off the reigning, defending, undisputed Super Bowl champions right there in the ballgame. And a part of that is, as aforementioned, because of Bryce Young, who Rich Eisen had very nice things to say about.
Right now, you could make the case, split moment right now, the quarterback between last year's first and second overall picks and this year's first and second overall picks, playing the best football, the most consistent football right now, is Bryce Young. You could make that case right now.
They almost beat the Chiefs.
I eyeballed him in Germany personally. And then what he did yesterday against the Chiefs, he's playing in rhythm. He's seeing the field better. He's not making silly mistakes. He's accurate and he's feeling more confident.
All that. All that. All things that your boy's been saying to you. Give him time to develop confidence. I agree. I think the benching was the best thing that's happened to Bryce Young. I think allowing that man to take a back seat, to sit, to watch, to relax, to learn the game. I liked it when it happened. And I'm a big BY guy. Have been from the beginning. I think he's got it in him. And if you didn't watch this Chiefs game, go back, find it, watch it. Watch the All-22 cam. I put up a couple of tweets last night about BY. Both from the first drive. I put up the I put up the first completion, the very first play they threw the ball. I put up the first completion, and I put up the first completion because I thought that what you saw out of Bryce Young was composure, was reading a defense on the very first one. You can see Adam Thielen lined up in the slot on the left. The Chiefs are in a single high with man coverage to the outside. BY sees Thielen in the slot. He's the only wide receiver with the cushion. Everybody else is jammed up at the line. If everybody's jammed at the line, you got two options. Number one, you check out of it. Number two, you understand you're going to have to sit in the pocket for 3 seconds and allow those wide receivers to get down the field, develop their routes, and create some separation before you can deliver the football. But he looked over, and he saw Thielen had some cushion. And he saw that Thielen had some cushion because the safety that was walked up covering him was showing pressure. Now, either he's coming or he's not. Either he's coming or he's not. And so when you see the snap, BY gets the snap and he turns his head and he looks right out there. I put a little triangle so you can see exactly where BY is looking. BY looks over and he looks at that safety. If that safety is coming, Thielen's your throw. If that safety is not coming, then it's going to depend on, is he staying back, letting Thielen come to him, or is he attacking Adam Thielen on the snap? And you make a decision off of that. If he's coming up Adam Thielen, you allow Thielen to hopefully accelerate past them going the other direction. If he is sitting back letting Thielen have a cushion, then Thielen is your throw, but you got to zip it out there. But what does he see? He sees the safety coming. He sees the safety pushing the line of scrimmage. So what does he do in that spot? He floats it up over the blitzing safety. He drops it to Adam Thielen. Thielen's able to put the head down, and he's able to pick up 7-8 yards. It was wonderful. And then there was a deep crossing route to Leggett, where BY drops back in the pocket, feels the pressure off his left-hand side, recognizes, again, Kansas City throwing a single high safety at him, which means that a crossing pattern that goes across the entire field will be open, but you've got to let that route develop. You've got to give XL time to put the DB in the back pocket to get underneath the safety and get to the sideline. Because either that safety is going to protect the nine route down the seam or a post route, or he's going to float over with XL. Either way, somebody's open down the field. So he sits back in the pocket. He feels pressure on his backside. He takes 3 steps to the right to avoid that pressure. And by the time he gets there, he notices XL's got the cornerback in the back pocket. The single high is dropped to protect against the post route to the end zone. And he throws a dart over the right-hand shoulder where only receiver can catch it. It's a first down and a whole chunk of yards that sets up Carolina for a field goal on the opening drive. The guy gets it. The guy understands it. The guy's seeing the field, and it shocks me 0% that people are starting to say nice things about him. We got to run to a break. When we come back here in just a minute, Rashad Beard, host of the Panther Nation podcast, is going to join us on the show. We'll talk a little Panther football with him when we come back. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. It is the Fade Upstate. Is wrapping up hour number three here on a Thanksgiving week Tuesday. Ordinarily, our next guest joins us on Thursdays at this time to talk Panther football, but I'll be elbow deep in oyster dressing and stuffing by the time that rolls around on Thursday morning. So Rashad Beard, kind enough to join us here on a Tuesday AM. What's up, big dog?
What's going on, man? You know, the game went about how I wanted it to go, so I feel good, man. As a Panthers fan, we should all feel good. I feel good about it.
Should feel good. Should feel good. And not just should feel good, Rashad Beard, but there's a lot of folks. We were talking about this in the last segment. I don't know how much, if any of you have heard, a lot of people saying some very nice things about the Carolina Panthers. I'll play you a little clip. This is what Pat McAfee and the gang had to say yesterday.
Carolina Panthers, hey.
That was a battle.
Yeah. Wow.
What a show.
Okay. Bryce Young gets pulled from the lineup. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're going to be benched for a little bit. Then you're going to go back in there, and then you guys are going to look completely differently. I think that was a nice sense of relief for Bryce Young. Getting a chance to watch a little bit, learn a little bit, see what the offense is supposed to be, because this is his first year in Canales' offense as well. So the way they've played, Carolina Panthers. You know, and we were obviously one of the main ones to dump on them.
Sure, of course.
We like to talk about every team in the NFL. Yeah, whenever there's 20 people at the games and everything that's happening is happening, it's hard not to make fun of. But now that the Carolina Panthers a lot of hope going into this offseason.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, granted, we still got 6 weeks left of the season and everything like that, but there is a lot of hope for the future, I think, down there, when in the past there wasn't.
Rashad Beard, just a bunch of fellas saying a bunch of stuff that you and me been saying for like 8-9 months now, man. I'm glad people are joining the party.
Yeah, we've been saying this, and it's funny, you know, when the national media starts to pick up on it. We're a team that never has been respected by national media, so it's just interesting to now see. I mean, it was a competitive game. We didn't win, but it was good to go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs. But this is about what we expected. This is the kind of performances we expected coming into the season with Bryce Young and his development and things that, I mean, it's looking good. You know, it was a rough start, obviously, and this is one of those things where you actually have to trust Dave Canales and his processes. That we all got up here and questioned, hey, whether he should be benched or not. And obviously, things are working out. We questioned whether he should be named the starter week in and week out. And it's working out. So Dave Canales, he should have earned the trust of many in Panther Nation with the way things are going. And we just got to sit back and trust the process.
Rashad, I think what has driven me crazier than anything else this season is the folks who, and it's not you, it wasn't me, there were some, I'm not saying it was Lonzo, I'm not saying it wasn't Lonzo. What drove me up a wall is the people that thought with Canales in there, with BY having a new guy, whatever, that it was just going to be like a fire start out of the gate. Like this team was going to come ripping 6-0 right down the chute to start. Like this wasn't going to take some time. You know how big culture is in the NFL. When you look at teams like Detroit, like Kansas City, when you look at teams like New England that had 20 years worth of culture under Hoodie and Brady, and now that culture is gone, they're lost. They're floundering. They don't know what to do. It takes time to establish that culture, and you got to do that before you can really start getting the offense going. This was always going to be something that took some time to build to, and for the folks that are hitting me on the text line going, oh, Rob, way to make stuff. Rashad Beard, I got an over 4.5 wins bet on the Carolina Panthers in. Now, I know we're still going to be pushing it, and I know it's going to be a fight to get to 5, but I put my money where my damn mouth was. This is exactly what I expected. This team was going to, around midway, was going to click and was going to find that culture. Here we are now, back half of the schedule, a little tough, a little rough to get to the end of the season. But you're telling me that team that played on this Sunday, as banged up as they are, went toe-to-toe with the Chiefs for a full 60, can't snag one from Tampa Bay on Sunday? You're damn right they can.
Yeah, I think we can get one from anybody. When you look at the schedule, there is no game that isn't winnable on the remaining schedule. You went toe-to-toe with the reigning defending Super Bowl champion, two-time Super Bowl champions. And so, yeah, I think any game is definitely available for us to win. And as long as we continue to get better, stay healthy, right, that's a big part of it. We did lose JT for a little bit. Hopefully he's okay. But this team is getting healthy and things are starting to click. And all that work, all that you know, the culture and all the stuff that Dave Canales has been saying is starting to come to fruition. And we just got to be a little patient. I know it's unfortunate and it's something we got to deal with as Panther fans, but it just kind of it is what it is, man. We got to hang in there and stick with it.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the X's and O's from this game this past Sunday. Rashad, then we'll look ahead to the contest with Tampa Bay this Sunday. And I think you have to start with Bryce Young. 260-plus yards in this one, had a touchdown to go, no picks in it. And more importantly, and I saw this from the first drive, the very first completion. I put up a thing on Twitter about it last night. Completion number one I thought was indicative of what Bryce Young is. Made the good read, saw the safety coming off the blitz, recognized Thielen was the primary target. And the only question once he read that was, am I slinging it out there because Thielen's got cushion, or am I floating it out there to get it up over the blitzing safety? Read the blitz, dropped it. Two plays later, hit that long pass on a crossing route against the single high safety because he recognized the safety was staying deep to cover up the seam route and just dropped it in a dart of a throw 40 yards down the field. I just turned around. I was sitting there on Sunday morning watching with the wife, and I looked and I went, that's what I've been telling people he can do. Like, he had every read and was accurate. In fact, the only thing that went wrong was, like, Leggett and Thielen both had a drop that they make 99% of the time that probably get them closer to 300 yards if we're keeping it a buck.
Yeah. The drops were tough. Fortunately, the XL drop didn't prevent us from scoring because that was a huge drop. But you're right, man. Bryce looks absolutely comfortable. What we saw, what we witnessed Sunday was Bama Bryce. If you looked at Bryce Young play college football at Alabama, that was Bryce Young, Alabama. That was Bryce Young version, Alabama version of Bryce Young, excuse me. He's comfortable. He trusts his guys. That's what I took away from this game, is that he trusts his guys. If you look back in games prior to him being benched, he was taking some of those sacks, right? He would hold on to the football a little bit too long because he took some massive hits in that game. But he was able to let the football rip. I know my guy's going to catch the football. I know he's going to be where he needs to be. I'm just going to let it rip. And that's the difference between Bryce Young prior to the benching and Bryce Young after the benching. He trusts his guys out there. He's way more decisive. He looks confident. He looks comfortable. And the benching worked. And everything you said was spot on, man. He looks really good. Not his best game statistically. He had a better game against Green Bay last year. But, boy, if you put everything all side by side, this was definitely – he looked like his best game. And I'm excited for it. He's getting better. You look at his PFF scores. Every week he's getting better and better and better, and that's what we want to see, progression.
Talk to me about Dave Canales as a play caller, because down the stretch, this was a game when Carolina was down a couple of scores and starting to claw back into it. This is a spot where a lot of coaches could fold. This is a spot where a lot of coaches could get over-aggressive or could maybe shell up a little bit and be less aggressive than you need, trying to protect the football and all that. I thought Canales had a fantastic game strategy for a dude that I am still seeing comments. And you could agree with disagree with said comments, but you know, you go to the message boards and I'm still seeing a lot of people going, oh, I question him as a play caller. I got to tell you, man, I think my dude was cooking on Sunday to get Carolina back in that game and give them a legitimate chance to win. And if it was anybody but Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, you probably do.
Yeah, interesting strategy. I thought that we were I wish we would have ran the football or attempted to run the football a little bit more. That's my only complaint, especially down in the red zone. We got there three times early in the game and could not score. So that's a bit – well, could not score seven. We walked away with some field goals. That was a little frustrating, but I understand it. The Chiefs' run defense is absolutely great. It was a game where the football was put in Bryce Young's hands and he delivered. And it's going to be very interesting moving forward. Now that you can see Bryce Young can deliver, how he's going to now play that and not be scared to put the football in Bryce Young's hand and then find some balance with the run game, right? Because again, the Chiefs run game or run defense was very, very good. Top five run defense in the league. And so I think we got dictated to a little bit saying, hey, y'all not going to run the football on us. And we just got away from it. Again, some of those play calls were great. Some of them were execution. You got to catch the football. Some of those things are not on the play caller. And I'd be lying to you if I didn't say, well, I was a little bit nervous when we got to the red zone. But again, these are things that are going to get better. I see the progress. So I'm not going to dump on Canales. I'm going to learn to trust Canales as should everybody else. When it comes to decision making, when it comes to his play calling, his coaching ability, let's trust him and let's see what he has moving forward.
Talk about the defensive side of the football. You and I have been saying all year long, you talk about the injuries, you talk about the fact that your best player is down for the year, that guys are having to move around, shift around, play different spots. A lot of different looks as Ejiro Evero's defense has had to adapt to some things. That's Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, they kept you in the game. Yeah, there's a couple of spots. I think Josie Jewell on that on the touchdown pass on the opening drive, I think he got tricked. I think he was supposed to cross with Noah Gray, and he just kind of got lost in the sauce, and Mahomes took advantage. But, you know, outside of a couple of mistakes, you make a mistake against the Chiefs, they're going to stick it in the back of the end zone against you. You can probably get away with that against Bo Nix. You can probably get away with that with a couple other quarterbacks, not Patrick Mahomes, but that's one of those spots, Rashad Beer, where I go, there were three or four real bad mistakes that if you clean that up, probably win that football game. And if you're fully healthy with Derek Brown out there, you probably win that football game.
Yep, that's the perfect point. We got to remember, we're not healthy, right? Derek Brown is out, Shaq Thompson out, so we got some major leaders out. And you got to kind of take that into context. You know, Evero can't go out there and play, right? If you look at the last run with Mahomes and him get running for 30-something yards, to me, I mean, if Dane Jackson goes and doesn't make a business decision there, we might have a whole different conversation. And that's something that Evero can't coach, right? You got to go out there and you got to go win the game. You know what I mean? We had, I think, what, 5 or 6 sacks. So we were able to get to Mahomes. We were able to, you know, we had a couple of miscommunication issues. We're still not perfect by any means. But, hey, you went toe-to-toe. There was a lot of people out there saying, hey, we're going to get 40 rung up on us. And that didn't happen. We played a respectable game. I think the defense tightened up when they needed to. They bended a little bit. They did not break until the Patrick Mahomes run. But I'm proud of the defense. I'm proud of my team as a whole. Like I said, that's all I wanted to see, man. As a whole, we hung in there with the reigning defending 2-time Super Bowl champs back-to-back. And I'm happy. I'm proud of my guys. And we're going to get better. We can hang in there with anybody, defensively, offensively. And I'm happy for them.
Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast talking a little Carolina football with us here on a Tuesday AM. You got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming to the house. And listen, Rashad Beard, I think this game got a little extra sauce on it because, yeah, Tampa Bay's feeling good right now. They beat up on Tommy DeVito and the Giants, but it's the same team that you guys beat. They're coming to the crib this weekend. That's a state. I mean, this feels like a statement game. This feels like a, hey, we may not win this division this year, but we coming, and you better watch out for us. This game feels important to me, and now that you've got a Bryce Young that seems confident, seems like he's making good reads, seems like an offensive line that's giving him time to stand in the pocket and let those routes develop, I feel like this game kinda is not just a winnable game, Rashad Beard, but it feels like a game. If you win, the message is sent.
Yeah, it's an interesting game too. You got to take into the context that Dave Canales, he's the coach over there, so he knows those guys, he knows that personnel. So this is going to be an interesting chess match for Dave Canales. The Bucs are good, right? They're not a bad team. This is a division game, so it's any given Sunday. Any team can win this game. I do feel like, again, the swagger for the Panthers, although we're not dominating teams again, Saints and Giants got that victory there and lose against a respectable game against the Chiefs. I just think the swagger's there. I heard the post-game post-game speech from Bryce Young, man. I heard his voice change a little. His voice got a little deeper, you know what I mean? So when Bryce Young is out there speaking, you know what I mean, the swagger's there, you know what I mean? And so I'm hearing that, you know, the guys are feeling themselves a little bit. And when you've got when you have that type of swagger and you feel that type of that, you get got that feeling behind you, I think that, you know, we can go out there and win this game. Certainly a winnable game against Tampa Bay Bucs.
Okay, hold up. I'm gonna get in trouble. I'm gonna go a minute or two late, but I gotta ask about that because I saw the comments. I saw Xavier Leggett talking about it. I saw a bunch of media members, Sheena Quick, put up some stuff about it, whatever. And I heard that phrase. Bryce's voice changed. He sounded like a different cat when he was giving the speech. And none of the players are telling us what he actually said. But I think it was Leggett that told one of the beat reporters that Bryce Young gave a speech to the boys, and the boys were like, let's suit up and run it back. Like, we need to hear that, and we can go get this thing done. They wanted to go play that game again. What have you heard that he heard and what he said and how he said it? Like, give me the rundown on that real quick before we let you go.
Yeah, I don't know specifics. I kind of heard some of the similar things you heard, but I will say this. I'm happy about it. Like, I'm happy that Bryce Young is taking this bull by the horns. He's a leader, right? And once he steps up and becomes that vocal leader, that's what we need. He's going to have that, you know, you start to see that little, he's dancing in the locker room. This is good stuff. So I'm happy for Bryce. The swagger's there. We're gonna get there. And this is my guy for now. He's got to play out the rest of the season. He's got to get better. He's got to finish strong. But if things continue, he might be the guy for the future. Might be our franchise guy.
Rashad and I are glad to welcome you members of the national media who finally jumped on board with us. And also, Rashad's gone, so that's cool. All right, that's it. We're back after this. The Rob Brown Show, the Fan Upstate. Sports flash time to start the third period, but scored five in the final frame to steal the win. Sebastian Aho set Jarvis Martin, Natchez, Andre Svechnikov, Brent Burns, and Shane Gottesbier all scored, while the defense allowed just 19 shots to Dallas. The Clemson's men's basketball team knocked off the San Francisco Dons last night, 70-55, in the Sunshine Slam tournament in Florida. The Tigers were led by Ian Schifflin's 18, and as a team shot 48% from the floor and over 41% from three. Clemson also tallied 40 boards, allowed just 23 to San Fran. Lamont Paris Gamecocks fell to number 22 Xavier last night, 75-66. South Carolina had only three players in double-digit points and only 15 points off the bench, and were out-rebounded by Xavier 41-31 while shooting 42% from the floor and 4 of 17 behind the arc. Tune into Wire to Wire this afternoon, 3 to 7, right here on the Fan Upstate.